Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm Dean Welty, along with Rita Dunaway, and we have a special guest with us today to talk about a subject that is near and dear to all of us, but especially to parents who have just sent their children back to school. Yes, it's about education, but it's specifically about a very controversial topic known as Common Core, which is having a huge impact on our schools. But before I introduce him to you, I want to refer and really set the tone for our conversation, refer to a couple of familiar scriptures that will help us understand the topic. The first one is from Proverbs 22, verse 6, and it says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." The second one is a warning for us. It's from Hosea chapter 4, verses 1 through 6. I'll just lift a couple of excerpts from that where it says, "The Lord has a controversy with the inhabitants of the land because there is no truth, no mercy, and no knowledge of God in the land. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. And because you have rejected knowledge, I will also reject you." That is a warning, yes. And I take that very serious. He could have said, "The Lord has a controversy with the inhabitants of America," but that was before our time. All right. Well, with that as background, I would like to introduce our guest, Dr. Max Lyons, who is the Director of Teaching Services at the Foundation for American Christian Education, located, I believe, in Chesapeake, Virginia. He is also the author of a special book entitled Government Takes All, What's Left for Me.
I love that book. I have to put in a plug for it. I have referred to it so many times, even in past Crossroads programs, as our audience may remember. It's just a small book, but it's extremely insightful.
Well, and I was just going to remind that some of our listeners may remember that Dr. Lyons was our guest on Crossroads last year for a series of three programs built around that book on the subject of social justice. Well, we're delighted to have him back with us again. Dr. Lyons, welcome back to Crossroads.
Well, thank you so much. I'm glad to be part of the program and talking about something that I'm very passionate about.
Well, in fact, that's what I think we would like to know for starters. Can you tell us a little bit about your background in education, why it is such a passion for you today?
The Lord called me into Christian education in 1979. I've been closing in on four decades in Christian education. I've been in three Christian schools and over 37 years as a teacher and administrator. And now I'm working with the foundation, working with Christian schools and homeschoolers all over the country as well as the world. I have a calling and a passion to see that children are educated biblically. And as you, from those excellent scriptures that you read, this is what Christian parents should all be about, raising up their children in God's ways, making sure that they understand truth in every area of life. As it says in 2 Corinthians 10, taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. And that means not just thoughts about religion and prayer and Jesus, but thoughts related to history and government and economics and science and mathematics and philosophy, psychology, sociology. There's no area, no subject that's outside of the domain of God.
Yeah, that's a great point. I am often reminded that we are called to worship God with all of our mind as well as with the other parts of our being. Dr. Lyons, before we get into the discussion about Common Core specifically, I want to ask you if you can offer any insight as to why conversations tend to get so heated when they are revolving around education policy. I've noticed that whether you're talking to parents of public school, homeschool, or private school kids, conversations can get really heated on this subject. Why do you think that is?
Well, they say you shouldn't talk about religion and politics for the same reason, but I say religion, politics, and education. and it's it's as it should be, because for one thing, we're talking about our children. You know, I have four children. I mean, these are our most precious possessions, mm-hmm. and we're talking about their future, their life, their livelihood, their well-being. This is extremely important, much more important than anything on TV or in the popular culture. You know, we're and broadening it out just beyond our own children. We're talking about our future and the future of the world. You know, our quality of life, our prosperity or lack thereof. These all hinge on how we educate. And as Christians, you know, we're talking about the eternal souls of our children, and their children. Mm-hmm. You know, because how we raise up our children will affect how they raise their children. So these are extremely important issues. And the reality is that education is failing so many families in this country, despite spending that is unbelievable. And this is frustrating to people. The solutions that people are giving don't work. You know, reforms are always happening, but with all the lavish budgets that government has to educate, nothing really changes, except in a lot of cases it gets worse. The motto could be always reforming, but never reformed. So, yes, it's an extremely important topic, and everybody seems to have an opinion on what we need to do to fix education.
Just to back up on your own background, I think you said you began this work in 79. Was that before your children or as a result of your children?
No, that was as soon as I got married, and 2 years later, our first child.
So there is a connection, isn't there, when we have that passion for our own children? And I wonder too, Rita, just addressing your question, whether we feel judged mm-hmm. by those who have their children in another environment. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes that happens whether we intend that or not.
I think we're all a little self-conscious about it. But yes. I think Dr. Lyons put his finger right on it when he said, this is a paraphrase, but we all inherently know how important these decisions yes. are, how important education is for our kids. Yes. And so that's why we're all a little bit defensive, you know, and concerned. Are we making the right choice?
Sure.
So I think that was a great point.
Well, Dr. Lyons, let's get right to the point now. What is Common Core? Where did it come from? And what is it all about?
Well, this is a big subject to take on in just a few minutes like this, but we'll try to summarize. First of all, let me read their definition of Common Core. You can go right on their site and find this. Quote, the Common Core is a set of high-quality academic standards in mathematics and in English literature arts/literacy, or ELA. These learning goals outline what a student should know and be able to do at the end of each grade, end quote. The history in brief was this was a state-led effort. It was launched not too long ago, 2009, by state leaders, including governors and state commissioners of education from 48 states, from two territories, and from the District of Columbia. The state school chiefs and governors recognized the value of consistent real-world learning goals, and they essentially launched this effort, in their own words, to ensure that all students, regardless of where they live, are graduating high school prepared for college, career, and life. That's, you know, that's a quote from them. That's what they say that they were attempting to do.
Now, you mentioned the fact that Common Core doesn't cover every subject. I think the most noteworthy subjects that were excluded are science and social studies. And it's my understanding that there is sort of a parallel set of standards that are being developed now, and the expectation of the education community is that eventually they will be merged together with the Common Core. But I think it's important for people to understand Common Core isn't the actual curriculum. Is that correct?
That's correct. A lot of people mistakenly say Common Core curriculum. Mm-hmm. However, there's a reason to make that connection. Just think about it. if you as a teacher, and I've taught for many, many years, you have a standard. You have something that you want to for the students to know. And you're going to test, at some point, you're going to test the students to see if they meet that standard or know that information. And in order to test them, of course, you've got to teach it. Mm-hmm. You've got to teach it so they'll know what they're going to be tested on. So the practical effect of standards such as this is that eventually, of course, it does percolate down to the development of curriculum.
Yeah.
So what's happened is curriculum publishers, which is a huge, huge industry, lots and lots of money, these curriculum publishers change. They write curriculum and textbooks to quote, meet the standards. The terminology that they use is that they align with mm-hmm. the Common Core. Mm-hmm. This is not new. This is not new. This has always gone on in education. Curriculum publishers have aligned to meet other standardized testing.
Mm-hmm.
They've aligned to the SATs and the ACT, you know, the college entrance exams, because they are very important. So this is not something that's new.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of something that you would expect. In Virginia, you know, we have a similar situation before Common Core. We have the SOLs, the Standards of Learning Objectives. And they actually came out as a response to George Bush's No Child Left Behind Act, which a lot of us remember. And the students are tested rigorously on these Standards of Learning Objectives. It's a big deal. You know, schools, teachers, administrators, everyone is judged on the basis of how students do on the SOLs. And you could lose your accreditation based upon how students do on these tests. So they're high-stakes tests. So what happened in response to that, ultimately, is that test has driven the curriculum in the Virginia public school classrooms. I've talked to many public school teachers who've told me that exact thing, and a lot of them, most of the ones that I talked to, didn't like it because everything was geared toward getting the students ready for the SOLs.
Yeah, I just want to underscore your explanation because I think sometimes parents can be confused. They hear people complaining about Common Core invading their schools and all that, but then they hear federal or state officials saying, well, Common Core isn't a curriculum. We're not mandating a curriculum. The curriculum is up to the individual school board. So I think it's important for everyone to understand that is the way it happens, that Common Core is a set of standards, but the standards absolutely do drive the curriculum.
Dr. Lyons, I think what we've discussed is there's always a tension between who really is responsible for the child's education. Is it the parents? Is it the local school board? Is it the state? Is it the U.S. federal government? Can you just elaborate a little bit more on how the U.S. Department of Education is involved?
Well, it seems like you're getting into the jurisdictional question now, and of course, that is the main topic of my book, Government Takes All What's Left for Me. And it's a very interesting idea and concept. And to briefly answer your question, from a biblical standpoint, the jurisdiction, responsibility, the authority for educating our children lies squarely with mom and dad. With parents primarily, and then with the church secondarily. Make a strong case from Scripture for both of those. Parents have primary responsibility. Church has a secondary responsibility to teach. Interestingly, civil government, you cannot make a case anywhere in Scripture that civil government has any responsibility, authority, jurisdiction in education. So that's probably a whole other topic for another time. But one reason why we're reforming, always reforming but never reformed, is because we're trying to reform and fix and change and fix to make the system better. That's ultimately not according to God's design.
Yeah.
So the ultimate answer here is not to just get rid of Common Core. We even get rid of Common Core and go back to the last iteration of something that was unbiblical. That's not going to solve our problem.
Yeah.
Common Core is just the tip of the iceberg. Segueing from that back to your question, the U.S. Department of Education. In general, you think about it. You know, this is a big bureaucracy. You centralize. You know, at the top. I was thinking about the difference between private education that's based upon the authority of parents and the church. We have teachers, we have administration, and we have a board, and that's it, in a private school. In government education, you have bureaucracies, but not just one bureaucracy. You have layers of bureaucracies, and each is competing for power and money and control. So you've got individual schools with their administration, their management. You have typically city central offices of education. You have State Department of Education. And now, since 1979, we have a Federal Department of Education. So you'd have to observe that if more managers were the answer, then education in this country would just be outstanding, right? If all these people and all these bureaucrats and all this regulation were the answer, education, we wouldn't be having this discussion. But we have a situation now where we think that centralization is the answer rather than decentralization. Mm-hmm. And I take from a biblical standpoint, I say that decentralization is the answer, not centralization. So one reason why Common Core is so bad and there's so much of an outcry against it is this whole idea of centralization of authority. A lot of people won't go as far as I will in saying that the education should be completely privatized, but a lot of people would say federal government should get out of it and we should return it to the states. Mm-hmm. The U.S. Department of Education got involved in this issue. They, as I stated earlier, started with states, but in March 2009, you can just look up this history, the Department of Education revealed a backdoor method of gaining federal control of state educational policy when Secretary of Education Orrin Duncan announced what was called the race to the top. And it was an opportunity for states to compete for a share of, you know, drum roll, $4.35 billion, which was reserved for state education by the American Recovery and Restoration Act. So here's the caveat: to be eligible for funding, states had to promise they would fully adopt, you know, again, drum roll, set of common college and career-ready standards mm-hmm. that were supplemented with only 15% of their own standards. Mm-hmm. In addition to this, applicants had to demonstrate that they would expand their state's longitudinal data system so that they would collected data on student health demographics and things like that. That's another whole aspect of Common Core that's very troubling.
So basically what you're saying is this is another instance of the federal government taking taxpayer money from the states and then holding those tax dollars hostage unless the states do what it wants. And I understand that at this point or at some point along the way, 45 states have adopted Common Core in some way, but that Virginia is not one of those 45 states, that we have opted out. And my understanding is that it's because Virginia had already developed its own standards, the SOLs that we Virginians hear about all the time, and that Virginia believed the SOLs here were superior to the Common Core. So what I'm getting at is, if that's the case, if we don't have Common Core standards in our schools in Virginia, why should we be so concerned about it?
Good question, because this is a state-by-state thing, and eventually it started out with a lot of states, and of course 12 states have now introduced legislation to repeal it. It's definitely losing in its popularity. About 60% of people polled in a recent Gallup poll said that they don't like Common Core. Mm. But we've got to remember here in Virginia that, you know, just as the rising tide floats all the boats, also the sinking tide has the same effect. And that is because this whole idea of textbook industry adopting or aligning with Common Core That affects almost every school. It even affects the private schools, because a lot of the private schools, even Christian schools and homeschools, you know, thank God they have alternatives, and a lot of people use alternatives. Our foundation produces an alternative called the NOAA Plan. But a lot of these schools and are using curriculum now that's, quote, aligned with the Common Core. So it does affect us all, and sometimes in subtle ways, and sometimes it takes time for it to filter out. But the effect of it is to bring, and we really haven't gotten into the content of Common Core, but the effect of it is to bring more humanism, more secularism, more Marxism to our curriculum and ultimately to our students.
Given that, I guess we can assume, and given your previous reference to the importance of testing, that private schools or even homeschool situations will also feel compelled to teach to these Common Core standards. Is that correct?
That's already happening, yes. I can tell you from schools within my network, I'm hearing from the Christian school community and the Christian school network that Common Core aligned curriculum is already making its way into the private schools, the Christian schools, and the home schools. I'm hearing that from the field. So this is a concern. Yeah.
So even though they may not have adopted Common Core standards, the effect is the same.
It may not be as profound. It may not be to the same degree as the government schools. Nevertheless, it is affecting them, and that's very, very concerning to me. It's sort of like the cultural decline, how that's affecting the Christian home and the Christian family. You know, we can sit back and say, well, that's the culture and that's the world, and that's we're raising our Christian kids a different way. But we know that these things have a way of affecting everyone.
Well, Dr. Lyons, we only have a couple of minutes left, but given the fact that it's becoming nearly universal with all of our students, what specifically do you find so objectionable about the standards themselves?
I'm going to answer that question by referring people to a wonderful resource called YouTube. because if you just watch one video by, and I'm going to recommend a couple of experts, there's a Dr. Duke Testa, who's the assistant professor of English at the University of Wisconsin, Oshkosh. And then there's a Terrence O. Moore, who's a Hillsdale College professor. Both of these gentlemen have wonderful YouTubes that detail in great detail what is objectionable about these. And in general, it's the worldview, and we can talk about the methodology and a lot of that, but the thing that I find most objectionable is that the worldview is even more atheistic, more humanistic, more liberal, progressive, whatever adjective you want to put on it, promoting, you know, ideas, promoting exacerbating problems with racism in this country, promoting the idea that America is you know, not exceptional, that there's so much wrong about America, promoting wrong views of sexuality. I mean, you could go on, but we don't have the time for the details now.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not an education expert, but just by reading some of the language in the mission of the Common Core, you can see that its mission is all about efficiency. It's not about excellence. It's not about pointing kids toward truth, goodness, and beauty. It's not about teaching them how to think logically or how to speak or write eloquently and persuasively. It's all about career and college readiness. And while career and college readiness surely is not a bad thing as far as it goes, it is so anemic. Dr. Christopher Perrin said this: with no robust vision for the end of education, education ends. What do we have in its place? Technical training. Technical training never was and never will be an education. And then he goes on to say, Watch the teachers become technicians. Watch the students go to sleep.
Dr. Lyons, I want to add to that, and again, we only have a minute left, but are you suggesting that we should go back to the objectives that were described in the Northwest Ordinance of 1787, which says, as you know, religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary to good government and happiness, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged. Is that what we would like to see again?
I would like to see that. I would like to go back to Webster's original definition of education and to the point that he made in that definition to give, quote, to give children a good education is important. To give them a religious education is indispensable, and an immense responsibility rests on parents and guardians who neglect these duties.
Well, I'd like, in fact, to quote Mahatma Gandhi. He says, there is no school equal to a decent home and no teacher equal to a virtuous parent. I think that reinforces what we've been talking about this morning.
Well, unfortunately, I'm going to have to cut off the quotes. They're all good, but we are just out of time. So that's going to bring us to an end today. Our guest has been Dr. Max Lyons. Thank you so much for being with us today. And for our listeners, if you'd like to listen to this program again, if you need to hear it again to catch some of those references that Dr. Lyons shared, go to our website at valleyfamilyforum.org and click on the link to Crossroads that's there on the homepage. We want to thank our sponsors, Blue Ridge Chimney Service and Scott Dunaway's Dental Practice. And as always, we are grateful for your prayers, your encouragement, and your generous financial support. If you want to make a tax-deductible donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, you can do so by check to P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, Virginia 22803. Thank you again for joining us. I'm Rita Dunaway with Dean Welty and Dr. Max Lyons, as well as our amazing engineer, Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week at the Crossroads where faith and culture meet.
My song, like he said, he has become my salvation.